This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Have accused Iran of inconsistency regarding its obligations under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Israeli forces killed another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. And the European Union vows to support Ukraine in its war with Russia, but says Ukraine's accession to the bloc will not be quick. Hello everyone, and thanks for tuning in to World News. U.S. and its European allies have accused Iran of inconsistency regarding its obligations under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The U.S., the U.K., France, and Germany made the comment in a joint statement, citing a latest report by the International Atomic Energy Agency on Iran. They said Iran's measures go against its nuclear safeguards demands of the NPT, and they're referring to a Wednesday report that criticized Iran for making an undeclared change to some of its advanced uranium enrichment machines. Iran's rejected the report on operations at its Fordo nuclear site. Nuclear Chief Mohammad Islami says the report is based on a mistake by an IAEA inspector during an unannounced inspection of the Fordo plant last month. He says that Tehran immediately provided explanation on the mistake to the IAEA and issued was resolved. Tehran slams the French president's criticism of Iran's peaceful nuclear program after his meeting with the Israeli prime minister. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said the meeting in itself with the prime minister of a regime guilty of violence and massacres worthy of condemnation. Nasser Kanani added that President Emmanuel Macron denounces Iran's peaceful program while forgetting the Israeli regime has tens of warheads in its nuclear arsenal. Kanani also pointed to Israel's refusal to allow inspection of its nuclear facilities, calling on France to review its policies and engage in mutual respect to stop inflicting further damage on relations with Iran. In his meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu in Paris on Thursday, Macron warned Tehran against continuing with its nuclear program, saying this will inevitably have consequences. Iranians celebrate the 44th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. Iran's largest annual film festival, the Fajr International Film Festival, is also being held in the capital, Tehran, amid celebrations. Yusuf Mishahmadi has more.
The most prestigious cinematic event in Iran has kicked off once again, bringing together filmmakers, directors, and members of the cast and crew, as well as movie lovers and moviegoers in Tehran. The 41st edition of the Fajr Film Festival opened with the screening of the movie Maestro by Imad Hosseini, an adaptation of Alina by David Mamet. A clear sign that this year we should be expecting a very different film festival. First and foremost is the conspicuous presence of first-time directors.
24 movies will be competing in the main categories. These movies were picked out of 87 movies that were submitted to the Secretariat. All the 24 movies will be screened first in Tehran and in about a week in 30 provinces across the country. The screenings will continue until February 12th.
But that is not all. In the international section, nearly two dozen movies are also taking part. For many of them, this is a regional movie premiere, which is why, as always, the spotlight is on the festival and movies participating in it.
The first days of the festival can tell you a lot about what's going to happen. And by the looks of things, I'm personally expecting to watch some really great movies this year.
Movies will be competing for the top award or the Crystal Seymour in six different sections based on their stories. The Cinema of Salvation, Resistance, Muhammad Amin, and Eastern Vista being the most competitive sections, with all eyes watching to see which movies will take home the Crystal Seymour. For movie lovers and moviegoers, this is the time to be in Tehran. However, in less than a week, on February the 5th, movie theaters across the country will also be joining in. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
Israeli forces have killed another Palestinian in the West Bank as tensions remain high in occupied territories. Regime troops shot dead a 25-year-old man near the northern city of Nablus. Israeli military claims that he had attacked its troops stationed at an outpost there. Also on Friday, Israeli forces injured dozens of Palestinians protesting against illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. They targeted Palestinians with live fire and tear gas. Israel has been stepping up its deadly crackdown against Palestinians. So far this year, its forces have killed more than 35 Palestinians in the West Bank. Defying international outcry, Israel has approved plans to build about 1,200 settler units in the occupied city of Al-Quds. Regime has endorsed two plans to build housing units and other structures for commercial and public purposes for Israeli settlers. New structures will be built in six neighborhoods and settlements. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has slammed the regime's settlement plans as a crime and attempt to change the status quo of Al-Quds. The movement said that such Judaization projects will never legitimize Israeli occupation. It added that Palestinians will continue to resist Israel's colonial plans until they liberate their ancestral land. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. Earlier, activist and commentator Edward Horgan gave us his take on Israel's plans to build new settlement units in the occupied city of Al-Quds.
In my view, it's not just Israel that's a problem. It's also Israel being supported unconditionally by the United States. The United States is partly using Israel as a proxy war or a proxy to destabilize the Middle East. I think the most important aspect of all this, in fact, is this, what's happening to the Palestinian people all the way since 1945, at the end of the Second World War, is a slow-running genocide against the Palestinian people. And it is hugely inappropriate that Israel would be using the Holocaust and misusing the Holocaust as justification for what it's doing to the Palestinians. And this is a very serious issue.
Now, the European Union Commission chief says there is no rigid timeline for Kiev's accession to the European Union.
There are no rigid timelines, but there are goals that you have to reach. Reforms, for example, to improve a situation in the candidate country to then reach the accession negotiations and the accession itself.
Von der Leyen praised Kiev's determination to meet EU recommendations despite being at war with Russia. Elsewhere in her remarks, the EU Commission chief said new package of sanctions against Moscow is on its way to make Russia pay for its actions in Ukraine. She said the technology will be targeted in the fresh sanctions to curb Russia's ability to produce drones. Meanwhile, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urged the EU to accelerate its arms supplies to Kiev.
If weapons are accelerated, namely long-range weapons, we will not only not withdraw from Bakhmut, we will begin to deoccupy Donbas, which has been occupied since 2014.
Zelensky also said that Kiev will not surrender Bakhmut and will fight as long as it can. This comes as Kiev's Western allies have pledged more weapons, mainly sophisticated and long-range arms, to Ukraine. Russia has repeatedly warned the West's military support for Ukraine will only prolong the war and increase people's suffering. This as Russia ramps up pressure on Ukrainian forces in eastern battlegrounds and also to the northeast and the south. U.S. has announced a new military aid package worth $2.2 billion for Ukraine, with no end in sight to the war in Russia almost a year after it started.
Today's announcement includes critical air defense capabilities to help Ukraine defend its people, as well as armored infantry vehicles and more equipment that Ukraine is using to effectively, including Javelin anti-tank missiles, artillery, ammunition, and conventional and long-range rockets for U.S.-provided HIMARS.
New tranche of arms brings total U.S. assistance to Ukraine to more than $29 billion since the start of the conflict. Meanwhile, the French Defense Ministry has announced it has finalized talks with Italy to jointly supply long-range missile systems to Ukraine. Shipment will be delivered in spring. Ukraine's Western allies have so far pumped Kiev with tens of billions of dollars in military assistance. China has dismissed U.S. claims that it sent a spy balloon into the country. Beijing says that it was in fact a civilian airship unintentionally breaching U.S. airspace. China's foreign ministry said the balloon was used for meteorological research. The ministry said the unmanned airship has limited steering capabilities and deviated far from its planned course. The Pentagon has claimed balloon's flight path carried it over a number of sensitive military sites. After the incident, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken postponed his visit to China. U.S. officials said that Blinken did not want the balloon issue to dominate his meetings. Philippines has allowed the U.S. to boost its military presence there by giving Washington access to four more bases in the country. The move is part of Washington's attempts to gain strategic advantage over China in the region. Washington and Manila are concerned over Beijing's increasing assertiveness in the South China Sea. China slammed the U.S.'s increased military presence in the region as provocation.
The United States is ramping up its efforts to counter China's growing regional power. Amid Washington's rising tensions with Beijing over the South China Sea and Taiwan, Washington and Manila agreed on plans to accelerate the full implementation of the, quote, Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, with the full agreement to designate four new agreed locations in strategic areas of the Philippines. The deal would allow Washington to deploy military equipment and rotate its troops to four more bases. Washington has currently five bases in the Philippines. The two sides also agreed on the substantial completion of the project in existing agreed locations.
Today, Secretary Galvez and I also reaffirmed our mutual defense treaty commitments. And we'd note that the mutual defense treaty applies to armed attacks on either of our armed forces, public vessels, or aircraft anywhere in the South China Sea or the West Philippine Sea.
According to experts, Washington's access to those bases could provide U.S. forces a strategic position from which to mount operations in the event of a conflict over Chinese Taipei or in the South China Sea. China has criticized the U.S. for its plan to increase its military presence in the Philippines, warning that granting the U.S. greater access to military bases by Manila could hurt regional stability and raise tensions. The move is part of U.S. plans to encircle China's maritime border in anticipation of a war over Taiwan, which Beijing considers as its own. Last year, tensions rose to unprecedented levels after the then U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited the island. China has repeatedly warned against any attempt that delegitimizes its national sovereignty. Furthermore, China claims sovereignty over virtually all of the South China Sea, which is also claimed in part by Brunei, Vietnam, Malaysia, and the Philippines. The waters are believed to sit atop vast reserves of oil and gas.
The U.S. has also reopened its embassy in the Solomon Islands after a 30-year hiatus. Move is further attempt on the part of Washington to counter Beijing's growing influence in the South Pacific. NATO, U.S.-led military alliance, is also trying to expand its ties with China in a bid to counter Beijing.
In another attempt to counter China, The U.S. has opened an embassy in the Solomon Islands after a 30-year absence as it seeks to boost diplomatic relations in the Pacific. The last U.S. embassy in the Solomon Islands closed in 1993. The move comes after China struck a security pact with Solomon Islands last year. It was the first known bilateral security agreement between China and a country in the Pacific. The region has become the center of a geopolitical and strategic tug-of-war between China and the U.S. Meanwhile, NATO, which is a U.S.-led military bloc, is trying to bolster its ties with Japan in a bid to strengthen an alliance against China. The NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has visited Japan, saying the Western military alliance will continue to strengthen its partnership with Tokyo.
Beijing is watching closely and learning lessons that may influence its future decisions. What is happening in Europe today could happen in East Asia tomorrow. So we must remain united and firm, standing together for freedom and democracy.
Japan is a close ally of the U.S., and in recent years, it has expanded its military ties with other Indo-Pacific nations, as well as the United Kingdom, Europe, and NATO. Back in December, Tokyo unveiled a new national security strategy that will see a large increase in its military capabilities. The strategy includes the deployment of long-range missiles. Japan also hopes to ease restrictions on arms export to strengthen its military industry.
The South Korean foreign minister has warned that the North, any provocation by Pyongyang, will be met with a firm and united response. Park Jin made the comments during a meeting with the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Washington. Park said Seoul and Washington are committed to strengthening what he called their extended deterrence against North Korea. Earlier this week, the U.S. and South Korea vowed to expand military drills to counter North Korea's weapons development. Now, this followed joint air drills that prompted Pyongyang to warn of all-out showdown. North Korea has time and again denounced America's growing presence in the region. Pyongyang considers U.S. joint drills with South Korea and Japan as provocation and rehearsal for invasion. Raging wildfires in Chile have killed at least 13 people as a summer heat wave sweeps across the southern hemisphere. At least one firefighter was among the fatalities. A pilot and mechanic were also killed when their emergency support helicopter crashed. Blazes have damaged hundreds of homes and torched some 14,000 hectares across southern and central parts of the country. The government has declared states of catastrophe in the hardest hit regions, allowing for the deployment of soldiers and additional resources. The Chilean president has cut his vacation short to visit the affected areas. The Interior Minister has warned of risky conditions in the days ahead as high temperatures and strong winds still persist. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. The researchers have found that, in most years, influenza, especially the H5N1 variant, was reported at the highest frequency of any infectious disease. 776 outbreaks have been documented since 1996. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Nature wrote in this regard, the World Health Organization's disease reports reflect public health priorities and surveillance capabilities. Globally, influenza has been responsible for more outbreaks than any other infectious disease over the past 23 years, followed by respiratory syndrome, MERS, and Ebola. Finds an analysis of disease reports by the World Health Organization, WHO. The study also reveals the subjective way in which disease outbreaks are often reported, suggesting that this can affect how resources are allocated. Public health authorities use several data sources to track infectious disease outbreaks, but the WHO's Disease Outbreak News, DON, is one of the most influential. Global health researcher Rebecca Katz at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and her colleagues collected all 2,789 DON reports issued between 1996 and 2019 in a searchable database. The database includes the metadata pulled from each report, such as the location of the outbreak, type of disease, and time frame over which it progressed. The researchers found that in most years, influenza, especially the H5N1 variant, was reported at the highest frequency of any infectious disease. 776 outbreaks have been documented since 1996. Saudi Arabia, which documented MERS 179 times, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo reported 105 Ebola outbreaks. Katz says the diversity in reporting patterns results from the disparate surveillance capacities of various countries, along with the diseases that national health authorities prioritize and ultimately what the WHO decides to concern itself with. There are a lot of humans involved here, and humans are making different calls, she says. For instance, Ebola is reported much more often than other hemorrhagic fevers that periodically erupt in Africa. Other variations can be explained by the quality of the country's health systems. For example, Egypt has reported 115 outbreaks, mostly of influenza. In the 23-year time span that CATS team analyzed, but no outbreaks have ever been reported by nearby Libya, which has an underfunded and unstable health system as a result of the two civil wars during that period. Timothy Brewer, an infectious disease researcher at the University of California, Los Angeles, says the analysis also shows that the WHO cannot track all outbreaks around the world and so must pick and choose. The team's searchable database could be a useful tool in providing verified information about large outbreaks and documenting the history of infectious diseases, says Mark Smolinski, president of the nonprofit organization Ending Pandemics in San Francisco, California. Having transparent, complementary outbreak reporting systems is an important goal, he adds. The faster we find out there is a real threat anywhere around the world and make that information available, the better off we all are. The database will allow researchers to look at the factors that determine how much money is spent to suppress a specific outbreak or how external circumstances such as conflicts or weather events affect them, says Katz. However, the study notes that DON reports do not mention all known outbreaks in every region. Katz says the WHO could improve the DON report by increasing transparency around how it prioritizes the thousands of notifications it receives, creating more specific criteria for an outbreak's inclusion, and adding information about contextual factors such as climate hazards or outbreaks in animal populations. A spokesperson for the WHO said it is drafting a publication detailing its decision-making process and criteria for DON reports, as well as restructuring its website to make the reports easier to search. The agency adds that it standardized the structure and format of the DON report in 2021, after the period that Katz's study analyzed. WHO is a learning organization and this extends to DON, the WHO wrote in a statement. Meanwhile, Daily Mail reported COVID isn't over yet, but scientists fear the next pandemic is already lurking just around the corner waiting to pounce. Deadly diseases like Ebola and Nipah, which kill up to 75% of people they strike, are two of the biggest threats. Others, pathogenic hazards, which could theoretically sweep the world if given the opportunity, include bird flu, Crimean Congo fever, CCHF, and the plague. UK health officials are constantly monitoring the threats around the planet in order not to be caught off guard. The UK Health Security Agency, UKHSA list, updated this week, includes 15 of the most frightening infectious diseases. These are known as high consequence infectious diseases, HCID. For a pathogen to be given this category, it typically has a high fatality rate and requires an official, organized response to ensure it is managed effectively. Because symptoms are often difficult to recognize, the list breaks the data down country by country and shows if human cases have been spotted. Yet, it warns that locally acquired HCIDs can re-emerge in countries where they were previously eradicated if the necessary transmission factors are present. But in the same fashion, for countries where the only supporting evidence of a HCID is human serology, the study of blood, the true risk may be lower and the data should be interpreted with caution, UKHSA advised. The data was created to allow health professionals to assess the infection risk to each country, but it is also publicly available for anyone to access online. These were H5N1, H7N9, and H5N6. For decades, scientists have warned that the disease is the most likely contender for triggering the next pandemic. Experts say this is because of the threat of recombination, which could see a deadly strain of bird flu merge with a transmissible seasonal flu. Crimean Congo fever, CCHF, severe fever with syndrome, SFTS, SARS, and the plague accounted for the final four HCIDs in different countries. SFTS, or severe fever with syndrome, is a disease transmitted by bites from a certain group of virus-carrying ticks. It triggers symptoms including severe fever, vomiting, and diarrhea. Crimean Congo fever, CCHF, is a viral disease which is mainly transmitted by ticks, which can prove fatal for up to 40% of cases. The Ebola-like disease shares similar symptoms at the start of infection, including muscle ache, abdominal pain, a sore throat, and vomiting, among numerous others. Severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, is a viral respiratory disease caused by a SARS-associated coronavirus. It is the earlier, more deadly cousin of SARS-CoV-2, commonly known as COVID, which first originated in China in 2002.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. This is Back to Reality. I am Asma. I have the pleasure to be your host. And here with me, I have two very dear guests, Sister Bita and Brother Muzaffar. Both of you, welcome to Back to Reality.
Assalamu alaikum. My pleasure to be here.
Of course, the pleasure is all in here. Brother Muzaffar, shall we start with you? Please introduce yourself briefly, very much, what you study and...
I'm Muzaffar Haider from the UK. I've studied English literature and now I'm in the Hawza, in the Islamic Seminary.
That's very good. It's a pleasure to have you in here and wish you luck with your studies. You, Sister Bita.
Yes, I'm at your service. I'm Bita and I study medicine at one of the University of Tehran in Iran.
So have you ever had this idea in yourself that one day I'd become the leader of the world? I would change the entire world.
Who doesn't have? It is one of my actually wishes.
It's
on your to-do.
It's a bit far-fetched, I know, but it's not impossible.
Impossible. Exactly. Even the word impossible says that I am possible.
How are we going to have the control and, I don't know, these recognition over anything? You cannot do
if
that.
If you have power, I guess you can.
You have to choose some people. You have to have candidates to do some sort of things, you know? You cannot do anything by yourself. This is the problem I have.
Yeah,
I
but if you're the leader of the world, you can choose them.
Yeah.
But, you know, always there are some people who are wrong, you know.
So, Bita, you have this idea that one day I'd become the leader of the
world. No, at all. I didn't tell that.
Okay. You did. Okay. You
what
did. It's
what
recorded.
Did you just want to do? You imagined
that's,
of what?
That's a nice question. The first order.
One thing that I would have is I would force everybody to travel.
Thank you.
Force them? Yeah. Would you give them the money as well?
Exactly. This is the problem.
Yeah, I would provide the money and everything. Passport's not a problem, all that. Provide their transport and, you know, wherever they want to stay, blah, blah,
so
blah.
So go and lead the world.
Especially for racist people. If anybody's been charged with racist crime or anything like that, they would be under compulsory traveling.
Yeah. The first thing I would order is that I get all the money from all the people around the world.
Yeah.
And I would, I don't know,
build yourself a palace. That's
what
you do.
Give that to them in equal amounts to all the people.
So you're a
Thank
communist.
You. Robin
you're a communist dictator.
But yeah, because, sometimes.
Robin Hood, just the
Wait, some people in the society are working harder than others. You're still going to give them an equal pay?
Yeah.
Okay.
What is your problem with that? You're forcing people to go traveling. And you're telling me my thing is wrong. I will kill you if you do not agree with that.
Okay.
I just at the very beginning. Then go kill everyone who's against you.
Exactly. This is your strategy.
No. That's not one of my, three things. That's just something I do for fun.
Okay, your second thing.
Now the story
is getting so nice.
All right. Wait, hang on a second. Let's have your first thing.
Exactly.
Well, I have never wanted to be a leader. But if I was in a position, position to lead the world, then I would have done something to eradicate all the disease.
Disease?
Yeah, the diseases and illnesses in this world.
So you'd probably start by destroying the pharmaceutical companies.
No, perhaps I would have devoted some special laboratories for doing research and finding a cure for all the diseases.
Okay,
that's the only thing that would happen in this world. And also about oppressed people.
Mm.
Then I would have set them free, all of them.
It's so logical to be imaginary, but where are we going to accept that?
What's your second thing, Sister Peter?
Let's start with that. I wanted to divide all the people around the world into two groups and then change the place of these two groups.
Oh, what?
I mean, you're going to live, for a month in the place of the other group. I mean, for example, you have a couple here in these two groups, and then you're going to change your place, status, your life, your house, your family, everything, and then you're going to experience a new life. I wanted to give to
so you're doing give a, you're doing a global social experiment.
That's even more impossible than the cure that I was talking about.
Thank you. I want to do that.
Okay. She's just reveling at this imagination. She's I'm gonna break apart these families.
Yes. Do you have any problem? Do you have any problem with that?
No,
at all.
Speak through a flower. My second thing, what would I do?
No.
I mean, we've said eradicate poverty. We've said eradicate disease. Yeah. I want to say something new,
Explode the world and make everyone happy forever.
Make everybody happy?
Yeah, exploding the world, everyone would die, and then they would go to the other life, which is eternal, and then the end of the story.
I'll tell you an honest one. I would create a global media which would guide everybody towards good ethics, morals, and Islam, the worship of one God.
Yeah.
And
there is always this enemy that would come against you.
The oppressed people that you just freed, some of them might have risen up against you. So I think you're out of the game now. And you like trying to, these people will hate you.
I'm going to set them free. They're not going
my
to rebel against me.
My people love me. Do you know why?
You just think so. You're rich.
I've just punished the racist people, made them travel. And they're actually better off for it. And they're not racist anymore. Mm-hmm. They've learned about new cultures. And there's a media empire, which is constantly indoctrinating them in a positive way. I'm actually doing better than you guys.
Really? Yeah. You just think so.
You've got one left.
Before you guys destroy the entire world. Let's go for a short break and then we'll be back. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying tuned. This is Back to Reality. I hope you're enjoying today's episode. We're talking about something interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. The things that you would love to do if you were the leader in the world.
Okay, we're going to go through this third one here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tell you the third one. I wanted to design a competition for the world,
Yes.
And I wanted to choose the most, the smartest person in this competition. Every year we have this competition. And then that person.
Nobel Prize.
That person can rule the world in place of me for a month in a year.
What is your competition? That's the question.
We're going to think about that. Uh-huh, yeah. It's a kind of variety
How long do they have for this competition?
What?
How long do they have to prepare
compete?
For this?
I don't know. We have to think about that.
It's a big competition.
Yearly,
year, perhaps. Yearly?
Yearly we have this competition. Every year.
So you're the leader of the world for only 1 year. Yes, that's it. The competition says that it happens yearly and then you are going to be the leader of this world for only 1 month.
They have only 1 month to be in my place. and they're eight year, and they have
thank
only
you.
One month.
They go for all that competition for only 1 month.
It's about being the leader of the world.
Hang on. So first of all, you destroyed their economy by making them all, you know, have one income, and you've killed the passion of all these people who wanted to work extra really hard. All these studious people who would have been studying harder because they want
Are
to aim for careers.
Are you humiliating my method of
Hang
ruling
on,
the world?
You split them in half and said you have to go in the place of this half and vice versa. And now you're giving
You are dangerous for my society. You,
okay, now Star Wars. We have Star Wars in here.
This is like Hunger Games. Yeah. She's having Hunger Games. I know what those competitions... She's not mentioning them, yeah, but she's going to make them kill each other now.
Yeah, something like a Squid Game.
You see what happens in those movies that there are vampires in them? They have this power to compel people to do things they want
exactly
them to
so.
Do. Then I would compel people to forget bad memories, or maybe I would compel them to have some new ideology.
It's going to be a disaster.
Why?
Need these bad experiences.
All of them are going to be the same.
Not, you know, if we don't have the memory of the bad things, we're going to go through that again.
So that
what
little child who has lost his entire family, both parents,
dramatic.
Right out of war. And he or she are just left alone.
You want them to forget that important crisis, which is like one of the most important things that is going to shape their personality.
That bad memory is going to make traumas in their brain.
No, but bad memories make people into great people in the future.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to be strong through sad things.
They want to. You have to. I don't know.
You have to. Otherwise, everybody in society would just be like this. Hello. Hello. Everything's great.
Everything.
Yeah, it would be a horrible place to live if everybody's happy.
I am not going to take their logic out of their mind.
Look, nobody
has
disease in your society. Nobody has disease in your society.
Nobody has sorrows, I don't know, sadness, depression, and anything. So life would be empty.
I told you, in the end, we're going to explode the world and then we'll die all together and go for the eternal life.
Meanwhile, you've just aided the pandemic, taking this whole population, putting them on that side of the world and vice versa. Like,
so
I've eradicated racism pretty much, right? And everybody's learning about other people's cultures and languages, which is fantastic. Plus, the media empire is now teaching people how to be better people through their video games, through their movies, through their comic books, right? Now, what do I do? A very clever scheme. I am going to indoctrinate the masses into thinking that a specific date is the Day of Judgment. And everybody is going to think that that specific date is going to be the end of the world and the Day of Judgment. Obviously, this would take years to build up to. And obviously, they'll get to that date and they'll realize that it wasn't the Day of Judgment, but...
Waiting for Godot.
Yeah, exactly.
I remembered waiting for Godot. they were waiting for someone to come and then that person would never come.
But they are the better for it. You see, because they've all started to love their families. They've all started to hold each other close.
No, they won't believe your words anymore.
That's fine. I'm done. What else do I want to do?
Them. Like, kill
them. They refuse internet.
Just kill them.
Now, okay, you guys. Some of you passed the test. Some of you have gotten worse. I'm just going to kill you all anyway. Anymore.
Thank
so
you.
It technically
kill them
is.
From the very beginning.
It wasn't a lie, right? It was Qiyamah. They're all dead now.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
You're going to be the scapegoat.
If Allah ever makes us the leaders of the world, one out of three of us will be okay. The rest will be dictators who want to who have this masochistic side in them and want to just see them suffer.
You'd better give up on your ruling the world.
Oh, it's a competition.
I'm going to fight you.
I'm going to participate in your competition. And then when I am the leader for 1 month, am going to form a group of people to dispose you.
I will never allow you to win this competition.
She would kill you.
It's rigged. It's rigged.
Exactly. She would kill you all. It's all imagination, you know?
Well, I'll tell you one thing.
There wouldn't be
it.
A single leader for the entire world.
Of
except for Ahlul Bayt
alayhi wasalam. Yeah. Imam Zaman alayhi salam, inshallah.
And since we believe in his coming, in his return, then that one leader is going to lead the world in the best way possible.
Oh,
he would neither kill people, nor he would have a competition.
I think there will be some killing. There are some people who will never change, and they will be just horrible, and they need to be destroyed, actually. And they're actually part of the problem for why the world is so bad in the first place.
Of course.
But one interesting thing that I got from this conversation is how much of your personality has just got revealed.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't believe in it.
The fact that your mind went there. I want to cure disease. I want to get rid of poverty. Well, I mean, you were quite scary, to be honest, sister. But it was a fun exercise. And I think it helps you to learn more about how what you want to do in the world.
Yeah.
And if people out there who are listening actually go through this exercise themselves and then, you know, and do it genuinely, we were just doing it for laughs, but if people do it genuinely, then they'll see the kind of world that they want to see. And then the idea is that you should start to work towards that world. Obviously, you're never going to be the leader of the world.
Of course,
but you can implement little changes that will start to go in that direction.
True. So thank you for both of you. This was all fun and lovely. And I would never forget today's episode of Back to Reality.
It
was all not reality. And it would never happen. And thank God that it would never happen.
It was back to imagination.
Yeah. But you can practice it just the same as Brother Muzaffar said, because it's fun and it would give you some clues about how you want to change your life and other people's life. So thank you for staying with us until another session. Farewell to all of you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Let the ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
According to political commentators, bilateral relationship between the United States and China has been set towards further deterioration as competition between the two major world powers continues with no end in sight. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. NBC News has covered this story and tells us more. According to internal documents, the senior U.S. Air Force commander warned his subordinates that they should brace for war with China over Taiwan in just 2 years' time. In a memo obtained by the outlet and confirmed by U.S. officials, General Mike Minahan, the head of the Air Mobility Command, claimed that as both the United States and Taiwan will be distracted by their presidential elections in 2024, Beijing will be able to make a move against the self-governed island. The memo said, "I hope I'm wrong. My gut feeling tells me we will fight in 2025. The document is referred to all wing commanders in Air Mobility Command and other Air Force operational commanders and orders them to report on all major efforts related to a potential standoff with China within 1 month. During the month of February, General Mike Minahan directs all AMC personnel to fire a clip into a 7-meter target with a full understanding that unrepentant lethality matters most. Aim for the head. He also orders all personnel to update their records and emergency contacts. U.S. commanders are also urged not to shy away from risk during drills. General Mike Minahan wrote, "If you are comfortable in your approach to training, then you are not taking enough risks." While an AMC spokesperson confirmed the authenticity of the memo, an unnamed Pentagon official told NBC News that these comments are not representative of the department's views on China. Senior U.S. officials have claimed in recent months that they have evidence China is rapidly accelerating its timeline for taking control of Taiwan. China has sovereignty over Chinese Taipei, and under the One China policy, almost all countries in the world recognize that sovereignty, meaning that they would not establish diplomatic contact with Taiwan's secessionist government. The United States, too, claims commitment to that principle, but in violation of its own stated policy and an attempt to antagonize Beijing, Washington has quartered the secessionist government in Taipei, supporting its anti-China stance and supplying it with large cash and weaponry. Tensions over the self-rule island intensified following a provocative visit there last August by Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House of Representatives at the time. It prompted large-scale Chinese military drills around the island territory, as well as a declaration by U.S. President Joe Biden to defend Taiwan. Beijing says the issue of Chinese Taipei is a red line that must not be crossed. In October, China's President Xi Jinping stated that although Beijing seeks peaceful reunification with Taiwan, it will never promise to give up the use of force and reserves the option to take all necessary measures to achieve this goal. The Fox News Channel has also covered this story and tells us more. U.S. Republican Congressman Michael McCaul has said that with the Democratic President Joe Biden in the White House, the risk of a conflict between China and Taiwan is very high. Congressman Michael McCaul added that the U.S. military is not ready to fight a war with China, and it could run out of precision missiles and advanced technology in less than a week if war breaks out. Congressman Michael McCaul said on Sunday, 29th of January, "We have to be prepared for this, and it could happen, I think, as long as Joe Biden is in office, projecting weakness as he did with Afghanistan that led to Russia to start its special operation in Ukraine, that the odds are very high we could see a conflict with China and Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific." Michael McCaul also said the U.S. could run out of advanced weaponry in less than a week if the United States launched a war with China. A study published by a think tank last week found that the United States would likely run out of some of its munitions, including long-range precision-guided ones, in less than a week if war breaks out with China. The Center for Strategic and International Studies study said that the United States was not adequately prepared for a war with China. The think tank said in its report, the U.S. defense industrial base is not adequately prepared for the competitive security environment that now exists. It is currently operating at a tempo better suited to a peacetime environment. According to the report, the U.S. military aid to Ukraine has depleted the arms stockpiles of the U.S. Department of Defense, the Pentagon, and points to the difficulties the United States industrial base could face in supplying munitions for a major war. Michael McCall lamented, "Our industrial defense base is broken. I signed off on all foreign military weapons sales 3 years ago. They have yet to go into Taiwan. We need that deterrence, but if we don't have the weapons, that's as critical for deterrence." Washington is Taiwan's most important international backer and arms supplier, despite the absence of formal diplomatic relations. U.S. arms sales to Taiwan are a constant irritant to Beijing's relations with Washington, which have rapidly deteriorated in recent years. The Washington Times has also covered this story and tells us more. The newly elected Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Kevin McCarthy, plans to travel to Chinese Taipei in what would renew tensions with China. Media reports say recently the U.S. Defense Department, the Pentagon, was preparing for Kevin McCarthy's visit to Taipei this spring. If McCarthy goes on to travel to Taipei, it would be the second trip to the self-ruled island by U.S. House Speaker in less than a year, sparking almost back-to-back escalation with China, which has sovereignty over Taipei. Former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan in August of last year, bypassing Beijing diplomatically and establishing direct contact with Taipei to plan the trip. That visit angered China, which issued statements critical of Nancy Pelosi and the U.S. and staged large military exercises in waters near the island to assert its sovereignty. Tensions in the Taiwan Strait reached levels not seen in three decades, with live fire drills in several areas around the island. Kevin McCarthy's possible visit could also waste any gains from a meeting between U.S. President Joe Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping at the Group of 20 summit last November, which was intended to pave the way for improved relations between the two nations after Nancy Pelosi's visit. International relations analysts with Eurasia Group told media that news of Kevin McCarthy's visit to Chinese Taipei was no surprise because the new House Speaker would want to maintain domestic political legitimacy in the face of bipartisan support for aggressive policy towards China. While the Biden administration had reservations about Nancy Pelosi's trip before it took place, the administration ultimately decided against forestalling it. However, analysts at the Eurasia Group agreed that a second official visit by a U.S. House Speaker does represent an escalation of what Beijing sees as U.S. interference in cross-strait affairs, even though Kevin McCarthy, a Republican, may not be seen as representing official White House policy.
Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.